It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 281. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I break down the latest BYU sports news, including baseball making the NCAA tournament, a Cal basketball signee switching to the Cougars, why we wouldn't want to fight Kalani Sitake, and which 27 football game is the most important. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Get this podcast and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to Matt and I right now. Matt, it's Taco Tuesday.
Oh, Taco Tuesday indeed.
So I am in Houston, your old stomping grounds, sitting in my hotel room. And our parents live here. And I went to dinner with them at the infamous Torchy's Tacos.
Infamous. That's more than famous.
That's more than famous. That's right. Ka-ka! Look up here. So I had, what did I have? What did you tell me to have? Hillbilly style?
Wait, I say that again? Is it a question? Or are you telling us what you ordered?
I don't know what I ordered. Hillbilly? Isn't that what you told me to get?
The Hillbilly. Yeah, the Hillbilly.
It was delicious.
It is delicious. I had one myself a week ago.
And they are, as the slogan said, damn good tacos.
They are pretty good.
And I had the Dr. Pepper ripoff
soda. Oh, they call that, it's called Doppelganger.
Doppelganger, that's right. It's quite good.
Yeah, there you go.
And as you know, I'm a soda snob, so I don't drink just anything.
You are a total soda snob.
It is true. It is true. So anyway, says the guy opening up soda that tastes like urine.
What's your frame of reference for that again?
So anyway, now that we've started on this fantastic note, this is Matt. You know, we are getting new listeners because of our association with the Deseret News, and now we've turned them off by using the word urine and damn in the first That's 60 great. Seconds of a podcast.
Both of them are never coming back.
Well, you know, their loss, really, Matt, their loss. So this is, we've been doing this for about 6 years, this podcast. We will be talking mainly BYU sports from a fan's perspective, and sometimes it will be serious, and most of the times it will be utterly ridiculous and fun. I can't guarantee the fun.
Sounds like a fair description. It's a fair description.
I can guarantee the ridiculousness, though. So, Matt, let's jump into it. Let's do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, BYU baseball had quite a run. They beat Gonzaga in the WWE tournament. No, that's not the tournament.
What tournament is this?
Yeah, what are they wrestling? Did Bryce Harper come and start throwing down haymakers?
Oh my gosh! Don't even lead out with the Bryce Harper thing. I was just wondering when you were going to bring this up.
What?
Going to poke at my Nationals fandom.
Did Bryce Harper do something this week? I'm sorry, I missed a miss.
No, he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything except what he's supposed to do, which is step up to the plate to play some baseball when some guy who's been stewing on a stupid grudge for 3 years threw a pitch at him. What a loser.
Oh, boy.
He won the World Series that year, and he can't move on? He's still got to hit the guy 3 years later?
Yes. Yes, he does. And Harper still has to then charge the mound.
Loser.
Oh, wow.
Loser.
Wow, Ace Ventura reference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're on one today.
The only other movie reference I can use to describe this is the character in Billy Madison when Billy calls to apologize for picking on him in high school. And then they cut to him. What's that guy's name? Seth Buscemi?
Yeah, Steve Buscemi.
Whatever the actor's name is.
Steve Buscemi.
And then they show him and he's got a list of people that he was going to get exact his revenge on. And then he puts some lipstick on and lays down on the couch. That's Hunter Strickland every night for the last 3 years. I mean, come on, man.
You're ridiculous. Let's get back to BYU baseball.
Whatever.
Let's get back to BYU baseball. I'm sorry I brought it up. Not really, actually. I'm not really sorry I brought it up. So the BYU baseball team beats Gonzaga, wins the WCC tournament, and will play Cal State Fullerton on Thursday. We're recording this, of course, on Taco Tuesday. Matt, this was quite an unprecedented run, and BYU had a shot at making the tournament before this, because there were some, you know, there was a possibility, but obviously this brought that home. Matt, this is the week after Dick Armand told us all BYU teams choke.
They're going to lose at some point, unless they win the national championship, but at some point they'll lose, and then everybody will be like, see, there you go. That's what he was talking about.
Yeah, but see, this is overachieving. This is overachieving, not underachieving. His article was about overachieving. This is overachieving. They were not supposed to win that tournament, and yet they did. So I'm just saying. I'm just throwing out that.
Miracle fashion, too. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. If you haven't gone back and read about it, we're not going to recap it tonight. But go and check that out. It's a cool story. So, Matt, our first tweet bag question of the show.
Tweet bag.
Comes from our good old friend, Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He says, Stanford forced to move its home regional games off Sunday to accommodate BYU. Detmer, zero to Detmer scale reaction on this. And then he puts on a second tweet, how epic would it be if we beat them and then they cry foul because of short rest for pitching staff or something. Hashtag tweet bag, hashtag tweet prayers. Matt, zero to Detmer. How epic would it, how awesome is it that Stanford had to move games off of Sunday to accommodate BYU in their being in their region?
Detmer.
Oh, it's totally Detmer. I hate Stanford. Oh, yeah. We talked about this last week, so this is awesome. This is awesome. So I'm very, very excited. I'm very, very excited about this, and I hope something like this comes to pass. But we'll see.
Did he just use the hashtag tweet prayers?
He did. He did.
Can you do that? Is that really a thing?
It is now.
All right. There you go.
Hashtag tweet prayers. I'm doing the little hashtag symbol with my fingers.
Yeah, you just ruined it.
A little Justin Timberlake. All right, Matt. Also in the news and in the BYU Cougars in the pros, in the first pick in the NFL draft.
Ooh, sit down, get out.
The New York Jets select stupidity. Matt, Mitch Matthews. Yeah, Mitch Matthews was released this week by the Minnesota Vikings. I believe that's his fourth NFL team in just a year. I don't think there's a good shot of Matthews playing any meaningful snaps in the NFL this season.
No, it looks like no.
I was hopeful because of his size, and there seemed to be some good vibe, good buzz about him last year.
Was really impressing people with his speed. It sounded like this spring, so I thought this might be the shot. But
you never know. I hope I'm wrong. Hope I'm wrong. Hopefully, maybe this opens up a better opportunity than the Vikings. Matt, before we move on to men's basketball, a couple of things to note. I am the author of several books. The latest to come out is the Sycorax series. The second one came out last week. The third in this series comes out on Monday. It's a science fiction story that is inspired by Shakespeare's The Tempest. Go check it out. You can just search Caliban's World, which is the first book, or Sycorax series on Amazon. It's exclusively available there. Matt, let's talk men's basketball, all right?
All right.
So several episodes ago, we talked about the Barclays Invitational Tournament, and now it has become official. That was old news that had just kind of slipped past us, but for this Thanksgiving weekend tournament at Barclays, this is going to be, according to John Rothstein of CBS Sports, BYU will play Alabama and then UMass in this tournament in the Brooklyn Nets Arena on the Friday and Saturday following Thanksgiving. Minnesota will also be, the Gophers will be in that tournament. Of course, they will be playing UMass in the first game, so they will not play them. So, Matt, looking at this, these probably aren't great teams that BYU is going to play. So it's hard to know, but Alabama and UMass are coming off fairly disappointing season. So good name factor, but it's hard to say at this point if it'll be big resume builders or not.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it could be, right? Like that, we just have to wait and see how the team does this year. You hope to win that game, and then that team goes on to have a good season.
Right.
Yeah, but this isn't like this isn't your dad's UMass. This isn't Marcus Camby, right?
No, this is not Lou Rowe and Marcus Camby. See that? I had a Lou Rowe jersey in high school.
Yeah, this isn't really, and I guess saying your dad's UMass would be inaccurate. I guess that was our UMass. Yes. So my son's dad's UMass.
Yes, that's what I mean. Maybe we that's have really a few, teenage right. listeners among the group. So it'd be their dad's UMass.
There you go.
Also in men's basketball news, Trevin Nell, who had originally signed with Cal, has paid a visit to BYU and then quickly switched and will now, after his mission, play for BYU. So this is a big get. He had obviously was going to a Pac-12 school, but when the coach Quanzo Martin left for Missouri, they let him out of his commitment. Which I have to say, I hate to say this, but that's pretty classy by Cal.
Oh yeah. It's the right thing to do.
It should be standing or operating procedure. We all know that they commit to a coach as often, if not more often, than they commit to a program.
And my opinion on this, we've discussed this before. I think any player in any sport should be allowed to transfer, maybe not during a season, right? But during an off season to any school he wants without penalty and be able to play right away. So,
right.
But Cal did the right thing here. You get a new coaching staff, you give a kid an opportunity to just go play somewhere else.
Yeah, for sure. So, Matt, your reaction on Nell, this is a kid that highly recruited, 6'5", known as a lights-out shooter, scored 25 points per game this past year as a senior. He had offers from Washington State and some other smaller schools. He's a three-star guy. How excited are you by this long-term for the depth of the program? Is this something is exciting or just kind of a business as usual?
Well, I think on the zero to depth scale, I'd say this kid, in my opinion, it's a firm Kevin Federick level of excitement for me. But before you decide that that's a negative thing, let me explain to you what I mean. I mean, Kevin Federick, you and I have talked about this is sort of a – an underrated quarterback in BYU football. He won some games. He was able to move the ball down the field. I'm kind of that level of excitement over Trevin Nell. I mean, it'll be a couple years before we see this kid step onto the court. And given everything we've experienced over the past couple of years, really on all these guys, for me, the jury's still out till I see him play some games.
Yeah, I mean, he's a three-star recruit. So, I mean, obviously this is a good get by Dave Rose and his staff, but this isn't a four or five star guy, so I think your level of excitement is fairly accurate. I don't know. I might call it Brandon Doman level excited. As you said, it's going to be 2 years from now before this guy plays for BYU, and typically that year after the mission, he's probably not going to be a major player. So we're talking about 3 years from now before he's a player. I have no idea what the roster is going to look like 3 years from now. I mean, we could sit here and play the game, but as we've seen from the last few years, the roster can shift quickly. So Matt, Gary Payne on Twitter, that's at FastBreakGP, asked this tweet bag question. Level of satisfaction, zero to Detmer, on Trevin Nell's 6'5 scoring machine, dissing Cal and committing to BYU. So this is a different question. How excited are we about him dissing Cal? I am Detmer level excited anytime anybody's dissing Cal.
I'm about the same place in terms of him dissing Cal. I mean, I could take it or leave it. I don't have the same animosity towards the Golden Bears that you do.
No, you don't. But why not?
Wait, they are the Golden Bears, right?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
What about their band? Don't you hate their band?
I do. I hate their band. I hate Stanford's band. The band is on the field. I hate them. I hate them both. Both their bands.
Both their bands.
In San Diego State's fan section. As long as we're at it, I'm just going to throw them in there too.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Look at you. See, we're aligned. We're aligned on this stuff. So, Matt, Jeff Johnston on Twitter. That's at Jeff J BYU. Took umbrage with something we said last week.
Umbrage, huh?
Umbrage. Well, that's not his word. That's mine. He says,
"Yeah, I can tell."
Yeah. He said, "Baffled that neither of you chose Haas as an impact player last year. I'd say he's the best college player on the team, not necessarily in parentheses the best future pro." Thoughts, Matt? Last week I picked Elijah Bryant, and you picked, if memory serves me right, Nick Emery.
I did.
So neither of us picked Haas. I don't remember if we talked about Haas or not off the top of my head. I
do remember thinking that Haas was a second for me. I don't know if we got there or not.
Haas is a second for me.
I think Jeff's use of the word baffled here is a little strong.
We just picked one player each, and I also mentioned Yoeli Childs because I think he could be the biggest impact player next year.
I'd say this, though. I'd be interested to know who Jeff thinks is got the best future as a pro. So I've always found that interesting, right? So he's saying that he thinks Haas is the best college player on the team. Jeff, go ahead and hit us up on Twitter here. I'd be interested to know who you think is the best future pro on this team.
All right. Who do you think the best future pro on this team? And you can't do cop out with Mika. He's gone.
Well, you can't because he's gone, right?
Yep.
I don't know. Is it Bryant? I don't know who it is.
I think it's Bryant. Size, he's got enough physicality as a guard, I think, to play at the next level. I don't know that any of these guys have a very good shot at playing in the NBA. Now, if we're talking pro overseas, I think Emery has a future overseas. I think Bryant certainly does. Childs, it's a little early to tell, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't look at this roster and say, and that's no indictment in any of them. There's not a whole lot of BYU basketball players that play in the NBA, right?
Right.
This is not a school that historically has generated a lot of long-term pro guys. Now, that was people go, Fred Roberts and Danny Ainge, and Greg Kite. That was a long time ago. Last BYU guy to make an all-star team. I don't even know who that is. Ainge?
I don't even know.
And Ainge didn't make a lot of all-star teams. I'd have to look that up. So I will look that up. But anyway, that would be an interesting question, Jeff. So hit us up on Twitter. And you can reach, any of us of you can reach us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. You can also get us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And you can email us at RiseAndShoutPod. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. So let's see. Where is Mr. Danny Ainge? Danny Ainge, which, by the way, who's only 6'5"? Like, sometimes when I hear people say, well, some of these guys aren't tall enough. You know, Haas is tall enough, right? Like, he's not too short. His if he ends up having problems, it's not going to be height related.
No, height won't be the issue.
Two-time NBA champion, 84 and 86. He was an NBA All-Star only once, 1988. So,
But he's the only guy, right? I mean, who else is even in that? It's not like you said. I mean, it's not like we're sending, especially in recent past. I mean, we got maybe the best player to ever come through the program.
Yes, and he made one NBA All-Star.
Wasn't a successful NBA player.
Yeah. And obviously he played in the NBA for a long time, for 14 years. So obviously he had a good NBA career and played on some very good Celtics teams, as well as, you know, he had some good teams that he played on in Portland and Phoenix. So and of course he's been a fairly successful executive. Interesting.
There you go.
Matt, last week we talked about There was Wise Guide on Twitter, that's at Wise Guide. They had posted you have $15 to build an NCAA tournament championship team using players from 2000 to 2017. Okay. And then they do kind of a daily fantasy league thing where they've got a $5 point guard, a $4 point guard, a $3, two, and one. Okay. And I will link this in the show notes. You have $15 to buy this. For example, his $5 point guard is Jimmer. His $5 shooting guard is Tyler Hawes. His $5 small forward is Kyle Collinsworth. Well, he's cheating a little bit there, isn't he? Kyle Collinsworth was a point guard for most of his career, at least half of it. But I can see putting him there.
Yeah, well, he's giving you a chance to, you know, to take them both if you really want to.
That's right. And then Brandon Davies is the $5 power forward, and Rafael Araujo is the $5 center. And interestingly enough, Eric Meek is the $3 center behind Plaisted. That's a tough – we talked about that last week where Mika fits. So, Matt, the problem is you only have $15, so you have to average $3 per guy. So here's the thing. Your $3 team, if you just did that, is Hawes, TJ Hawes, obviously, Jackson Emery, Charles Abuo, Keena Young, and Eric Mika. I like that team. I like it a lot.
Yep.
The question is, do you take any more? So, Matt, what are your thoughts? If you had a team on this list, have you thought through what you would do?
Yeah, so I've done this a couple different times, and it is hard.
Yes, it's really hard.
You know, I'm hard pressed to take somebody out of that point guard group other than Jimmer Fredette. Right? I think, you know, if you're trying to put together a good tournament championship team, that's you want. I mean, the guy can shoot unlike anybody else on this list.
Yep.
So you're out a third of your budget right there on Jimmer.
Yep.
And then that once you do that, I mean, you can only take a couple of guys at five, at most two, right?
Yep.
And then once you do that, you're really scraping at that point. So, you know, and then you got to, you know, you can put together a team. You know, if you want to try and go big, try and go small. You know, you kind of play around with it that way. But it's tough.
All right. So who you got? What's your team look like?
So the first time I did it, I walked through just kind of off the top of my head. You'll see that I spent all my money up front. So then I had to make some sacrifices there at the end. I took Jimmer, Mike Hall, Kyle Collinsworth, Noah Hartsock, and Chris Miles.
Oh, all right. Interesting. So I have got a little different. So I've got Jimmer and Jackson Emery forming that backcourt that existed previously.
Okay. Good move.
Then I've got Mark Bigelow as the small forward. Okay, which leaves me with $5 to get my big men. Right? Am I doing that right? 5, 10.
Yep.
Yes. That leaves me with $5 to get my big men. And I went with Eric Mika and Noah Hartsock. So my team is Fredette, Emery, Bigelow, Mika, and Hartsock.
Interesting.
But part of me, you know, it's a tough deal when you have to do it this way. It's a tough deal. The $1 players, by the way, are Matt Carlino, Anson Winder, Jonathan Tavernari, Chris Collinsworth, and Chris Miles.
Dude, it's interesting. The second time I went through, I kind of leaned kind of where you did there with Hartsock and Mika, but I did Jimmer, Mike Hall, and Abuo.
And Charles Abuo. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
I like Mike Hall a lot.
I know you do. I like Jackson Emery a lot more. And Emery's he's in this modern BYU basketball era, I think he might be the best perimeter defender we've got. So I don't think he's the three. I feel like I'm getting more value. I actually think he's the $4 shooting guard, not the $3. That's why I keep picking. No matter how I did it, Emery was always on the team.
That's interesting.
So I even tried one where it was Carlino, Jackson Emery, Collinsworth. Okay. So
wow.
That leaves you $6 with your big men.
And so then, what did you do with the big men with $6?
So I did I played with it a couple different ways, but I ended up doing McKelly Wesley and Nate Austin.
Yeah, I can see that.
And think about that for a second. You have Jackson Emery, a long guy, Kyle Collinsworth, a big guy who could also run point. And then you got Austin at, nearing 7 feet. Interesting. It's interesting. Hats off to Wise Guide for putting these together. Like I said, I don't completely agree with some of the values. I would have done it a little differently, but I think you did a good job.
But the way that he set it up presented you with some interesting choices to have to make, right?
Oh, yeah. Awesome choices to have to make. Awesome choices. All right. So, Matt, let's talk football. Before today, we're going to preview Portland, Hawaii, and UMass. Okay, but before we get to that, there's a few news items. A news article at 247 Sports reports that the Washington Huskies are trying to flip BYU commit Brandon Kaho. So Matt, after reading this article, knowing this is a guy that's got some talent and a Pac-12 team looking, percent chance you think Kaho flips and just decommits from BYU?
Based on what is, the little information that's here, I'm probably sitting on a pretty solid 50-50 here.
I think that's a probably fair way to do it.
I think that he committed a little bit early, right? And so he's just kind of feeling it out a little bit, see what the interest level looks like, see what the opportunity might be somewhere else. And there's a variety of reasons that somebody with the timing and everything for him could decide to go somewhere else. I think, if Washington has a good season and BYU doesn't have as good of a season, or if a position coach moves, or depending on what happens with rosters, the kid's got plenty of time to make a decision here.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of time can happen. A lot of things can happen when you have that much time. Matt, SB Nation put together a very interesting list of 11 college football coaches you should not fight. Okay. And on that list from the independents was Kalani Sitake.
Yeah, as
I look at this list,
fair choice.
I look at this list, I don't know that he isn't the one you'd least want to fight.
I actually thought about that looking at the list. I think in a no holds barred cage match, I think he wins.
Who are you going to take on this list ahead of him?
I think it comes down to him and Whittingham.
I think it does too. Let's see. They don't pick Charlie Strong, who I wouldn't want to fight either because he's a big dude.
And has a great name for a professional wrestler.
Yes, he does. But they didn't. They actually went out of the AAC with Cincinnati's Luke Fickell. I think Georgia Tech's Paul Johnson is a fierce guy. I will want to fight him, but I don't think he's taking Sitake.
No, he's not taking Sitake or Whittingham.
And Mike Gundy, he's a man. He's 40, but I'm a man. I'm 40.
None of those guys are taking Louisiana Lafayette's Mark Hudspeth. Did you see him on the weights?
Oh, yeah. They're not taking him. Come on, Harbaugh and Meyer? No. They're not.
Really?
They're not. You're killing me here. Whittingham would dust up with both of them, and Sitake would dust up with him. Sean Kugler.
The UTEP guy.
At UTEP. I didn't know the guy, but looking at his picture, I'm like, I don't know. I want to fight that guy.
He looks like he might have messed some people up in his day.
And Brian Harsin at Boise State is not isn't a small guy. But I still would Sitake would absolutely. But I'll tell you what, it would be pretty epic. What do you think about Orgeron, LSU convert?
I think Orgeron. Orgeron's going to be tough as nails, right? I mean, he's gonna take a pounding, but I don't think he has it in him to dish it out.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, you're talking about some guys that are much
Hudspeth,
in better shape.
Though,
you look at a Whittingham. I mean, that guy's in pretty good shape.
Hudspeth, though, you watch that video of him lifting weights. That man doesn't need a spotter.
Nope.
All right, so game times have been set, Matt, for... Let's see, where is... I had the football schedule pulled up, and now it's gone. For Utah State... Utah State, Wisconsin, and the LSU game have all been put together, Matt. So let's walk through what we know of it. Okay, on September the 2nd, we've got that game against LSU will be on ESPN at 7:30 Mountain Time. So 8:30 local here in Houston. I'm in Houston. The Utah State game will be on Friday the 29th, 6 p.m. Mountain Time on, unfortunately, CBS Sports Network. The Boise State game was already, I believe, had already been announced at 8:15 Mountain Time. So this is starting to come together, Matt. Anything jumping out at you so far as the schedule goes?
I feel like that LSU game, that's a late start.
That is a late start.
But you're going to have a lot of eyeballs, and there's some good games that weekend.
Prime time. There's going to be that'll be a big game. Speaking of which, Matt, the Lawless Republic put together which games matter the most. Okay, so I'm going to run down their list a little bit here. They basically put East Carolina, Hawaii, Portland State, all those games as kind of all together. Who cares? I agree. So we don't have to spend any time on that. They have number 6 Utah State, right. Number 5 Mississippi State, number 4 Boise State, Wisconsin 3, and then they have obviously LSU and Utah as the top 2. Matt, what game is the most important next year? I have an opinion on it. I don't think it's actually very close.
It's the LSU game.
Yeah, it's just dumb to be talking about anything else. They're the best team we're likely to play all year. It's a prime time game against an SEC foe on a national scale.
And it's at the beginning of the season. You're going to have the Portland State game warm-up game essentially before that.
Yep.
If you can pull off the win in this game and then have a decent season going down the stretch, I mean, you get yourself ranked. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that this could be the catalyst for.
I don't think Utah's the number 2 game.
So what's the number 2 game?
Wisconsin.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You beat a Wisconsin team as good as they've been the last few years in Provo. And, I mean, just do the scenario, right? Like, you beat – let's say you come in to that Wisconsin game with one loss. Pick your poison, LSU or Utah, okay? If you win that game against Wisconsin, you might not lose another game, right? There's no game the rest of the year. Boise State will be good. Mississippi State will probably be good. There's no game the rest of the year where you go, well, BYU's likely to lose that game, right? Now all of a sudden, New Year's 6 is there. Now you can make the argument, well, Adam, it's circular. Utah could be the same scenario, and maybe so. But Utah's the last few years hasn't been as good as Wisconsin. So I think it's Wisconsin. I'm not belittling the Utah game. It's easily number 3, and I don't think that number 4 is even close to number 3.
No, you're right there. You're definitely correct there. Those are the 3 games.
Those are the 3 games. And then it's pick your poison, Boise State or Mississippi State for me after that. Probably Mississippi State, just because I think a road game in the SEC is more important than a home game against a regional rival. Interesting. But Matt, if BYU goes 3-0, I'm putting on my blue goggles here.
There we go.
In those first 3 games.
Oh boy.
They still don't get into the national championship picture.
No.
Unless. Okay, let me paint a slightly different picture. All right. Very, very unlikely scenario. I'm in fantasy land, like deep into fantasy land. Okay. LSU does not lose another game until let's see, looking at their schedule, until Bama in November. Let's say, and if you look at their schedule, let's say they lost BYU. They don't play another really, really good team. Well, maybe Florida's going to be good. But regardless, they could be have just one loss going into Bryant-Denny Stadium. Okay, so that's part of the scenario. Second part of the scenario, Utah. Beat Utah, and then they go out, and again, they don't, you know, they've got USC. There's some definite, their schedule's kind of a murderer's row, actually. Never mind. They're not going to be. They're not going to be in good shape, and they may even be a really good team. And then Wisconsin, let's say they lose to us, and then they don't really have anybody hard again till November. And they don't play Ohio State this year. And they play Michigan at home. I've read a lot of articles where people are talking about them as a potential national championship contender. So imagine if they have one loss going into that Michigan game, and LSU has one loss going into the Alabama game.
Sure would make us look pretty good.
Make us look pretty good. But that's how good the scenario would have to be for BYU to even be sniffing the Final Four, right?
And you just got to wonder, like, you know, how good does BYU have to be to beat an LSU or Wisconsin team that's going to put together that string of wins?
Well, a part of it can be they don't have to be as good as you're thinking, in particular with LSU, because it's LSU's first game, right?
Right. And they've got some questions on offense.
Yeah, and they've got some questions on offense, and they may get better as the year goes on. But your point is well taken. If BYU wins those three games, then that just means they're a fantastic team and one of the best in recent BYU history, right? I mean,
well, I'll say this, right? Easy. If when we all wake up on September 17th, if BYU is 4-0 at that point, I think they'll run the table.
I think it is at that point a better than 50% chance that they run the table, yes.
If they're good enough to beat those three teams 3 weeks in a row, then I don't know that there's anybody else left on the calendar that can stop them. I don't know that they're that good, though. I mean, just to make sure we're being clear about what I'm saying here.
This is not what we think is going to happen. This is just us playing out that scenario. So, Matt, let's talk about some of the opponents not who don't matter. Oh, that's mean, Adam. Let's talk about, in that schedule, we're going to talk about Portland, Hawaii, and what else did I say? UMass. Who I judge to be the three worst opponents we're going to play this year on paper going into the year. We are not going to talk about what happened with Portland this offseason. Don't care. Don't know.
I don't even know if there's a way to know that.
So let's go to UMass, okay? Not good. The Orlando Sentinel is projecting them to be the 125th best team in the country. They were 2-10 last year. Mark Whipple is their coach. And let's look at coming back. The Orlando Sentinel is ranking every team, so I'm taking a lot of our stuff from their piece, which is by Matt Mershall on there. Matt, I look at this and I say they have two paragraphs of strengths. I think they were stretching on the strengths.
Yeah, but if you go into what he's talking about here, he's basically talking about two different things. You know, he's talking about a quarterback who was a redshirt sophomore. And then they made a change at their defensive coordinator. I don't know that I count a new defensive coordinator as a strength yet.
No. And their quarterback Andrew Ford, he might be okay.
Sure.
How's that with damning with faint praise?
He might be okay.
He might be okay.
Like, is that really the phrase you want to hear about your quarterback going into the season? I mean, I don't know how many like real diehard UMass football fans there are in the world.
You and I are from Massachusetts. Do you know one?
I know a ton of people who went to school there. I don't know a single person who I think is a diehard UMass football fan.
Everybody I know that went there. Now, granted, they were an FCS team when we were in college, right? But everybody I know who went there, who's a big college football fan, is a fan of a different team, without exception.
It's a basketball school.
It is a basketball school, and just a school that, you know, isn't widely known for their athletics, right? That's just not what the school is. But Matt, they also return 8 defensive starters from a terrible team, off terrible defense that got their defensive coordinator fired. So I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's like you like to have returning starters, but they weren't any good.
Yeah. Their new defensive coordinator is Ed Pinkham, who came from Western Michigan, who did have a very good defense last year. So I think there'll be a better defense, and that's, I think, the point that the writer is trying to make about it being a potential strength. But I'm with you. The world is littered with coordinators who did well one place, go over, and they don't find the same players to run their defense, so it doesn't work around.
And let's be honest, we beat this team by 42 points.
Yes.
You know, you'd have to have some pretty drastic improvement.
Yes, you would have to have some pretty drastic improvement.
You're just not going to get there in one offseason.
No, you're not. So this is one. Pretty easy. The Orlando Sentinel puts the Hawaii Rainbows as a top 100 team. And this is done by Ileana Limon Romero. She has them, they have their staff has them at 96. Last year they were 7-7, including 4-4 in the Mountain West. You know, they won a bowl championship series bowl. Do you remember that?
Yep.
June Jones then left. Norm Chow, unfortunately, was not able to get it done as their head coach, and now their head coach is Nick Rolovich. There are all sorts of rumors, there have been the last few years, but it seems to have died down, that this is a program that may disappear, right?
It's just a tough program to run, right? I mean, it's the travel's hard, it's expensive, it's hard to keep a solid coach in there. I mean, it's a difficult place to run a football program.
Yeah. And they last year had an okay offense, and their defense surrendered almost 40 points a game. So, you know, can they improve over last year? Well, you look at this, and my guess is no, quite frankly. And I think BYU beats them by a lot. That game at Hawaii, though, is always a little tricky, even against a lesser team, just because of the travel and such.
Yeah.
It just is. So
the travel's tough.
But like you said,
going both directions.
What a tough program to run.
Yeah, and it's not like there's not football talent.
No.
For them to recruit from, but it's just, it's tough. I mean, it's. I think you have a hard time recruiting from the mainland to get people to come out to play there. And you get, you know, and like I talked about before, you get a good coach in there. I mean, it's a tough spot.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough spot.
But I want to beat them every time we play them, ever.
You're still bitter about a few losses?
A little bitter.
So, Matt, a couple questions we had from the tweet bag about our offense for next year. Randy Whittle on Facebook asks, will Tanner be given the green light to run more this season? If so, how many rushing yards do you think you will have? Over, under 250 yards. Matt, over, under 250 yards rushing for Tanner Mangum.
I'm taking the over.
Oh, you're crazy.
You're crazy.
You're serious?
250 yards over the whole course of the season? Are we counting sacks? Are we doing this NFL style? I mean, how are we counting these yards?
Well, that is the question. I'm going to do it NCAA style, which means his sacks would count against him.
Oh. And I might renege. Because I think that's probably a good line, the 250 yards. I don't know if I'd use the term green light, but I think he's going to run a little bit more. I think he's going to feel a little bit more freedom. He's going to be a little more comfortable with the speed of the game. Mm. But And we might need him to a little bit. I'm not sure. I don't know what our running game is going to look like.
Well, I just think it's good to have him run a little bit. You know, and he's not Taysom, but he's got some skills with his legs. He can move. We've seen that, and I think it would be good to have him run at least some. If we're doing 250 yards without sacks, okay, that has been done 26 times in BYU history. So it's not that rare when you think about it. And some of these guys are not known for their wheels. Kevin Federick, now granted, he ended up with negative 77 yards because he had 300 yards in sacks. Ty Detmer did it. Robbie Bosco did it. So I think Mangum's a better runner than all of those guys that I just mentioned. So I think if we're talking that, if we're talking net, though, of sacks, there haven't been a lot of quarterbacks who did that.
And I don't know that we're running an offense that really lends to that, right?
Well, he's going to be back up a lot, and it's going to have, you know, it's going to have some issues there. And if you look at 250 yards total, oh gosh, I'm having problems with the sorting here on this sheet. Okay, that's only been done 12 times. Four of those were by Taysom Hill.
Wow.
And the other names on this list are Virgil Carter, Brandon Doman, Steve Young twice, Riley Nelson. Oh, by the way, Virgil Carter and Taysom Hill account for 7 of these 11 seasons. Actually, sorry, 12 seasons. 12 seasons. I honestly, if we're counting sacks, I don't think he gets there. I'm taking the under. If we're not, I'll take the over. I think he gets 250 yards running. Is that a cop-out answer?
Yeah, it's a total cop-out answer.
No, it's not. I'm just running the numbers, buddy. Just
talking. It's the same answer. It's basically what I was saying, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what you're saying, but I said it better. Jeff Johnston on Twitter has a second tweet bag question for us. He says, seems to me BYU's offense ranged from okay to bad last season. What do we expect this season? Matt, what do you expect this season? Do you see a better offense? Do you see more of this kind of Jekyll and Hyde that Jeff's talking about?
I think, kind of using his phraseology here, I'm going to go with, I expect us to see an okay to good offense. I think the offense overall will be improved. The running game remains, as I noted before, a little bit of a question mark for me. Tanner is going to show some signs of progression, I think. The players are going to be more comfortable with the system. I don't know that this becomes a blow the doors off season for anybody, but I think we end up in that okay to good range for most of the year.
Yeah, that's great. I think you got it there for sure.
Very tempered answer, right? I mean, that's a really safe way to answer this question.
So last year, according to Football Outsiders, we were the 35th best, 64th best offense, okay? And we were a good running team and a below average passing team, okay? So I think what Jeff is talking about really had to do more with whether we were playing a good, defense or not. This offense was not good enough to overcome really good defenses. And I think that's what it really comes down to, yeah. Honestly, is not that the offense was Jekyll and Hyde, though he didn't use that. That's my words. It was mainly we just weren't good enough to put up big numbers against really good defenses. And I think this year will be different. I think we will be better than that. I think the passing game will be better than that, and I think that will make the difference. I agree with you. The running game will not be what it was last year. Last year it was, a above average running game, and I think that will be below average next year. But if you look at, you know, where the defense will be, I think the defense will be similar, which is a top 35 defense. If the offense can be a top 35 offense, that's a top 15 team, typically. So, you know, if Tanner Mangum puts this together and they make a leap on offense, then this could be a ranked team at the end of the year, which is what I think most of us want to see, right?
Yeah.
That's what we want to see. Well, Matt, before we take off, there is Justin Sweeney asks about Wise Guide's football team and putting that together. We're going to save that for next episode. But he did the same daily football fantasy, you know, here's the dollars you have type of thing for football. So we'll do that next week.
And I loved the exchange I saw, including some former BYU offensive linemen about how you really can't do this without including an offensive line.
Well, here's the thing. That's really hard. I know why he didn't do that. Right? I get why he didn't do that. I think he could have done an offensive line by year.
Oh, do like take this year's team? See, I would love to look at it, you know, here's your, you know, take a couple tackles, a couple guards, and a center. Yeah. I'd love to throw that in there. I mean, I get why he didn't. I understand it's hard, and I understand a lot of people aren't going to be interested in splitting hairs between offensive linemen. But you know, and some of the, you know, and you look at some guys that moved around a little bit. So, you know, do you list him as a tackle? Do you list him as a guard? But I think that it's a different conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll talk more about that next week. Let's leave with one last tweet bag question, Matt. Andre Hutchins on Facebook asks, what are your NBA Finals predictions? Who wins Finals MVP? Who wins the final in how many games? Matt, both of us selected – did you have the Celtics or the Cavs making it?
I'm going to go ahead and say Celtics. I had the Cavs.
I had the Celtics.
I don't remember, and I'm just going to claim it.
And then, of course, we both predicted the Warriors. The Cavs have been better than I thought, and I'm still picking the Warriors in six.
The Cavs have been better than I thought, too. And I'm taking the Cavs in seven. Yes. Yes, I am.
No way. I almost...
Who's the best player in the NBA right now?
LeBron James.
And who is the second best player in the NBA? Does it matter?
Not...
Is the gap between LeBron and whoever number two is pretty wide?
Yes, though I would say
he's the best player in the NBA. He's not an underdog. If he's really the best player in the NBA, they will win this series.
He is the reigning NBA champion, right? I mean, I just think his supporting Golden State is so deep. I mean, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson. You take that three. And give me the next two, obviously Kyrie Irving, and then pick somebody. I mean, Durant's played fantastic. And this goes to show about the NBA, Matt. Cleveland didn't have the best record. They put in cruise control. We knew that. And there was a lot of people who were like, I don't know if Golden State, they look kind of out of wits, you know, in the middle of the year. In the NBA, just like in the games, it doesn't matter till about halfway through the third quarter. Don't pay attention to the NBA standings or how teams playing until after the All-Star break.
Yep.
Because all they have to do is get into a good position that they don't have a crappy seed and have to play a good team in the first round. If they do that, they're fine. And obviously Golden State was more than that. It would have been fun, though, to see them and the Spurs lock up if Kawhi Leonard had been healthy. Would have been.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
And the Celtics-Cavs series, if Isaiah Thomas had been healthy as well. I don't, at this point, having watched those games and a lot of this, I don't think it really would have changed the outcome. Might have, you know, delayed it by a game. Did you see that meme where it was the Celtics raising a banner that says, "We didn't get swept"?
I didn't see that, but that's funny.
It's kind of an accomplishment this season. LeBron, he's a beast, man. He's a beast. And to think I was a guy
back one of the greatest day, ever.
One of the greatest ever. I was a guy back in the day that told everybody, I wrote a column because I was still doing some freelance work back then about how you should draft Carmelo Anthony instead of LeBron. It sounds so dumb now.
Oh, man.
Carmelo Anthony.
This is why you're
disaster.
Not a GM, Adam.
Oh, there's a lot of reasons I'm not a GM, but this is, can you imagine being the guy that's like, yeah, I took Carmelo.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
He was good at Syracuse.
Please.
Yeah, that would have been terrible.
Orange.
Well, anyway, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Would remind everybody you can get this and a couple of other good podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast, including my other podcast, Bleep, which is an exploration of all things geek. Our last episode was Star Wars, and the upcoming episode next week will be me and co-host Alan talking about Spider-Man movies. Who doesn't love Spider-Man movies, Matt? Wait a second.
Oh, I'm pretty excited about some upcoming Spider-Man. The Spider-Man Homecoming, I saw a preview for it when I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2 last weekend.
Wait a second. You saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
It looks very entertaining. What? I'm surprised you didn't bring this up. Usually lead in with it with whatever my foray into nerdiness has been lately.
It was awesome, wasn't it?
Oh, it was awesome.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was great. So anyway, go check out those podcasts. As I said, you can find us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseShout. And anyway, tell your friends and tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!